less is almost always more. Every time you add a detail, you narrow the scope of what is possible.
Faction gives the person a perceived depth. And a lot of that is the goal with world building, is that perceived depth.
They're a placeholder for, hey, there's an important thing in this world that's here, and I don't necessarily know what it is, or I haven't taken the time to determine what it is, but I know that there's something there.
If you take a group of people and randomly assign them red shirts and blue shirts, the red shirts will eventually go, you know, I think they probably put us in the red shirts because we're the smarter ones.
Hey everyone, this is James, one of the hosts of the podcast. I'm busy going through and posting this content from our YouTube channel to our audio podcast feed. It's pretty much a straight rip of the audio with few changes except for the theme, which we've recently altered. I may also drop in from time to time to interject a thought or two or to do the wrap-up. Hope you enjoy.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Worldcraft Club podcast, now YouTube channel. I'm James, your host, and this podcast, YouTube channel, is all for storytellers, writers, game masters, and anybody else who wants to create rich, immersive settings for your audience to get lost in. I'm here today with Seth, and we're going to dive into something a little bit. I feel like this sometimes gets ignored by world builders, and I think it's kind of critical. So specifically factions, right? So I have this conviction, right? People are not selfish. They are us-ish and them-ent, right? So like, that's kind of how people operate. It's me and mine against you and yours.
Yes.
Not, I want it all for me and you want. There's even like,
why was I getting like Appalachia vibes
right there?
Us-ish and them and.
I like this. What is it? The don't tread on me, and they just change it to walk and with a snake.
Yeah.
Don't step snake. So like, it's the. But that's how people are. They organize into factions. If you take a group of people and randomly assign them red shirts and blue shirts, the red shirts will eventually go, you know, I think they probably put us in the red shirts because we're the smarter ones. And like, you know, they'll kind of start coming up with them. People start to sort of cluster, even if they're they're not really there. There's not a reason. And so it's one of the things we actually included in our Kickstarter for the World Builders Journal. In the core set, we actually thought it was important enough that pretty much every world builder would need it. Why? Why do you think this is important
for everyone? Because to your point, humans and any species that exists need other people or others of their kind, right? There is nothing that exists solo.
Yeah.
At least in the real world. Now, we could imagine something that exists solo outside of the real world, but when you're creating a story, you need conflict, which means you need more than one individual.
Yeah.
Right? Or even if you have an individual, you need threats for them to face off against. And anytime those threats are human, inevitably, relationship emerges.
Yeah.
And so factions are important because everybody has them and everybody wants to belong to them. And they're just a really interesting part of a world. Yeah. A faction can tell you so much about a world. Yeah. And so that's why we include it.
Yeah, it's kind of like you get the individual conflict as the story. Mm-hmm. The factional conflict is the world building part, right? Like that's
in a lot of ways.
The broader story comes from the factional conflict. I also think like another thing about factions is they can actually make it easier.
Oh, yeah.
Especially TTRPG players who are with us here, like, or specifically GMs or DMs, if you prefer, if that's the way you choose to live your life.
I never know how, like... Is that system specific? Sorry, random.
So GM, tangent. Game Master, as opposed to DM, Dungeon Master.
So is DM specific to D&D?
More or less. I mean, everything else? I mean, if I'm rolling Traveler, technically I'm a referee, is the way they call it.
Weird.
Yeah, I know, right? They love themselves some weird, though. GURPS is game master, typically. Okay. Is the terminology used. Right. I think it's a good like system generic term.
And yeah, game master probably is. I'm sorry, that was a completely...
Master of ceremonies, I think, would be better.
Let's talk about the factions of DMs versus GMs.
Yeah, let's break it down. That's a good way. We'll shoehorn in it. No, but like, if you're running a game, dividing all of your NPCs into factions, or at least having directionally some factions in mind, I think can be really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Partly because if you're running short of NPC ideas and they encounter somebody, you can be like, off the top of your head, well, they're in the Arcanist faction. They believe mages should run everything. And
right.
So just start there.
Oh my goodness. You just literally, with two sentences, created this incredible depth.
Yeah.
For this character, because they think mages should run everything.
Yeah.
Gives you such incredible rich options for how they then react to everything.
Yeah, just start there. It's essentially a fairy cake or core concept for a person,
right,
in some ways. And like, they don't need to, it's great if all your characters have incredible rich depth for them. But if you have a character you've just encountered and you just butchered the word calendar to say their name, it's Kalendar, you know, and
right,
you're like, this is the new character. And, you know, they're just like, he works at the mage's shop and he's an arcanist. You know, it's like in your head, you're like, okay, now you've got something to work with because you've added the faction. Working at the mage's shop is one thing that says something, you know, the name, whatever.
Yeah.
But like at the end of the day, the faction gives the person a perceived depth. And a lot of that is the goal with world building, is that perceived depth. Like we talked about the impressionist painting before, and like in a prior episode, which you should check out. But it was about this idea that you give an impression or an idea about where they're going, and the faction gives someone a directional and momentum quality to them that is
easy
for people to latch onto and just sort of imagine the rest.
It's an incredible world building shorthand for characters.
Yeah.
And for really important characters, we want to give more detail. We want to have three dimensions to them or more. But you're right. For somebody who's just walking down the street, it doesn't matter so much that we know every facet of their life. It's enough if they're wearing the, you know, yellow armband of the Miners Guild.
Yeah.
Because just with that,
you immediately know they're a child.
If in your world, all of the miners are children forced into labor, which you can give with other context clues.
They long for the mines. Yeah.
But that's actually exactly it. Because if your players have run across this faction before, they're immediately going to know just a huge amount about the character.
Yeah, yeah.
And man, I was just imagining children instead of dwarves in the gem mine.
Yeah, yeah. Deep minds. What is it said? You know, we ended child labor practices. Now all the kids play Minecraft. They long for the mines. the thing is, this actually ties in really closely with our idea about boundaries, right?
Yeah.
So like a faction is like a functional boundary, and remember that a faction sort of it's an ideology and it's an objective. Like one of the things we talk about with factions is that they have goals. They're trying to go somewhere, right?
Right.
One thing to remember is that allies are not friends. Allies are people with whom you share an objective, right? You're trying to do the same thing.
Yes.
And the cool thing about like having a faction in mind is you can secure what those characters are directionally going to do. But then the reason why I say this ties into boundaries is you would think that would be limiting. But when you have an arcanist who has completely disavowed violence, you have a very different type of arcanist.
Yes.
The aim might be the same. Majocracy, right? Complete supremacy of magicians. I was going to say musicians. That's bards. but they're doing it by just out multiplying everybody.
Well,
maybe
your magic in this world is based on music.
Yeah. And so, you know, you have this character who believes this, but also believes very much in persuasion. And that may put them in contrast with other members of their faction. It gives you more to work with, not less. And that's what I like about it, is it's grist for the mill.
Yeah.
You know?
You know, there's a principle in storytelling and in world building alike, that is, less is almost always more. In that every time you add a detail, you narrow the scope of what is possible. But as long, and this really comes back to this conversation of wonder, right? The more space you leave in something while continuing to define it, the richer and the more interesting it seems to be. Because our brains love patterns. We love to solve problems. And so this becomes a problem to solve. Oh, I wonder why this guy has disavowed violence. I wonder how he's going to interact with other members, maybe the, you know, the woman we met from the Arcanus last chapter or two chapters ago, who seems to be buying materials for bombs. I wonder what's going to happen here, right? And so there's a story, a conflict playing out behind the scenes. And we may never know how that interaction goes, but our brain subconsciously is going to try to figure it out.
And players will absolutely do that, because it's, readers do too. It's you go through it and you kind of imagine that. And this is where, like, a lot of the fanfic, and like we talk about even participation,
right?
A lot of this concept of your visitant interacting with your world really comes in. It's there. They are like, I mean, everyone does it. When you're reading, you are always trying to think of connections. It's partly why conspiracy theories are so popular, right?
Yes.
It's people look at two apparently disparate phenomena and they connect them and go, this is how these two things are linked. And like, that's an example of the human brain trying to create meaning and story where there might not be one. But the trick that most world builders, I think, miss is that they don't have to have that answer. Like, world builders do not have to have the answer with how this factional thing gets resolved. So the faction operates as a signal. You don't have to resolve that.
That makes me think of, and I know we've joked about it before, but every once in a while I'll still run across one of those Facebook posts that's like, ask me something about the world, and if I don't know the answer to it, I'll make it up on the spot. And I understand the desire behind that post. This is someone who loves their world, loves what they're creating, and is just really looking for other people to engage with.
They want to share it.
I mean, if you were like, instead of that, let's go out for a beer, most of them would probably be like, okay. Because what they're looking for isn't necessarily an answer to everything, an answer to every question. But I think that sometimes functionally, as world builders, we get stuck in that loop of, oh, I have to have details. I have to know what is going on. But just like our world building methodology is core concept, boundaries, have fun. Or
play. Serious play.
More, you know, why are you doing this? Core concept, boundaries, play. I like play, actually. Play is a great word to add to the end of that. Let's make that official. I think that factions can operate exactly the same way, right? Why does the faction exist? Like, what's the purpose of it in your world? What are you trying to do with it? Fix that in your mind. And then core concept is, describe this. What sort of feeling do you want this faction to convey?
Are they sinister, menacing, or are they jovial, are they comic relief? What are they trying to do for you?
And then what are their goals? You know, one of the best factions that I have ever encountered is the elves from Lord of the Rings. Specifically the elves in The Hobbit. The first time they encounter the elves as a faction, they're on the way to Rivendell and they come upon some of the elves. And Bilbo is talking to Gandalf and talking about the elves that he's heard all of these stories about. And you get this sense that the elves aren't good. in a weird way.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not the tall, noble, you know, seeking the good of all of the lesser races.
They all started taking Ritalin between Hobbit and Lord of the Rings.
Oh my goodness.
That is 100%. Yeah.
But the elves are mocking.
Yeah, they're singing.
They, and they make fun of...
Silly songs,
yes,
too.
Like silly
not,
songs.
Not like serious, pretty ones. Like right. Tra-la-la-la-lolly in the volley. Kind of like, so, like not making that up. That
right.
is one of the lyrics they sing.
Yeah.
But the reason that I bring it up, and the reason that I love that faction, or that way of introducing a faction, is because you don't know. Are these people actually going to help?
Yeah.
What's their goal? What's their objective? Because what comes across to you is they're just interested in finding interesting things.
And it's also, if you know a lot about, you know, lore with Lord of the Rings, then you'd know that the elves would not have a great interest in dwarves recovering treasure. You know
right.
what I mean? Like, that's not like a mission. It was like, I mean, they expand on it a lot later on, but it's just,
yes.
yeah, it's interesting.
Right. And
they're mischievous.
They're mischievous. And they're, one of the things that I love about them is their long lives come through in the way they engage with people. Because there is this sort of fleeting interest in sort of, oh, this is a new thing, but they get bored very fast.
Yeah.
And I love that that faction is introduced in that way.
Yeah.
Because it creates this point of tension and conflict in the story. And there's, you know, we could go into volumes about that kind of storytelling. But as far as factions go, you really quickly get a sense for who the elves are. But then you start running into serious elves.
Yeah.
You start running into elves who want to help and aren't just sort of fey figures in the leaves.
Yeah.
Right? And that distinction of, oh, this is a real person with a real character versus this is the faction they belong to and this is the general sense of the faction. Again, talking about...
There's contrast.
Goal versus... specific agenda of the individual,
yeah.
right? And the specific agenda of the individual does not have to match the overall goal of the faction as long as they are aligned toward the same thing.
And that's the thing, is factions are about are a vector, right? Like it's a direction and a force, right? It's taking you somewhere,
right?
And that's the goal with a faction. We're all going in the same direction. We're pulling in
right.
the same way. They can be completely different groups of people with
right.
varying personal interests and motivations and familial ties and other factions they're tied to.
Yes.
You can create factions within the factions. You can create your harmonious pacifist arcanists along with your violent revolutionary anarchists, and they could have overlap in a lot of areas and, you know, still hang out together, but
right.
have very different perspectives on how their goals can be accomplished. And then that creates, you know, a multitude of opportunities in there. And it's,
right.
again, it's this idea that this bounding condition of saying this character is in this faction creates opportunity for story,
yes.
right? And that's like the key thing is I think people, it's, I think really a lot of our desire with our approach to world building is basically detail where it counts, like
yeah.
where it's important.
Yeah, what's important.
Yeah. And so the first thing it requires is you just understanding what's important about that character that
mm-hmm.
you're introducing. And a faction is just a great shorthand to, if you can't think of something important for the character to be in place, certainly as like a game master, very specifically this applies to. I
sure.
think with a novel, it's going to be a different kind of thing. You should have an idea where your characters are going before they...
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
We'll talk about that.
The game master, right, turns up, you bring an NPC in, non-player character, somebody that you're playing and you're doing the silly voices for. You bring them in, and you may not have a fleshed out idea what you want them to do, but if they are in part a part of a faction, then while they may not yet have a defined place in the story, they do have a defined place in the world. So they will add to cohesion and immersion,
right,
even if you're not quite there on the details yet, which you can always make up as you go along and add finer details in.
Right.
And one hot tip I'd recommend for any game master, the most valuable preparation time is right after the session.
Yeah.
Write down some notes, get an idea what your players are interested in and what they want to do. Write down the stuff they laughed at, the stuff they enjoyed, the NPCs that they gravitated towards, and mm-hmm. then you have a great way to ramp up the following thing. Make sure the NPCs they like are getting kidnapped, not the ones they don't care about, because they right. will just ignore them. So it's like that kind of thing.
And it only takes 5 minutes to do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
To just sit down.
10 minutes of notes after a session.
And write a couple of notes. I think that depending on whether you're a pantser or a plotter for as a writer, that's going to determine whether or not you just create things out of thin air and say, I'm going to leave this as a placeholder.
Yeah.
Because that's the other thing that factions serve. Like, that's the other purpose that factions serve.
They're like a blank slate.
They are. They're a placeholder for, hey, there's an important thing in this world that's here, and I don't necessarily know what it is, or I haven't taken the time to determine what it is, but I know that there's something there, right? And so they hold space. They hold space for expansion later if it's helpful. And if it's not helpful and you never go back to them, that doesn't matter because they're holding space, right?
Yeah.
They expand the scope of the world because clearly people in the world thought whatever that thing is was important enough to get together in a faction.
Yeah.
Right? To form a group around it.
Yeah.
But factions can be more than just groups that have a political agenda.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You can have a faction that is a family.
Oh,
you
yeah.
can have a faction that is brought together by sort of random chance and their only goal is survival.
Yeah.
Right? Or their unifying goal, I should say, because each of them will have their own individual goals.
Yeah, unifying goal is a good one. What's the goal that draws them? Yeah.
Right. So I think that we want to expand our understanding of faction. I think faction could even be a group of animals, right? If you're writing a story that's set in a wilderness and you have bears on one side and wolves on the other, well, guess what? You don't have two human factions, but you have two factions.
Yeah.
And their goals are not the same.
Yeah, I mean, particularly, so just to throw this in here, because you've thrown that out there, and I think it's interesting. It may bewilder some folks, but I was thinking about it, and I was like, look, wolves are predators that hunt in packs,
right?
And they rely effectively on running their prey tired,
yes,
and then ambushing a single one
right.
of them,
which is their goal.
Yeah, and that's going to differ really mightily from a bear,
yes,
which is an earthbound kaiju, effectively
a
like
solo
it's just a
hunter,
monster. Solo hunter, big monster, but like they're going to have a very different conception of what a winning fight looks like.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's like they're going to go into conflict with different approaches.
Right, because to the bear, it's I slap it down a couple of times and it stops moving.
Yeah.
Or at least it better stop.
Yeah. And a wolf might be in it for the long game. They
right.
might stalk the bear for a long time.
Right.
Like, I doubt they would willingly get into a conflict immediately, but even then, conflict avoidance versus, you know, conflict
That's right.
engagement are different things as well.
So that's another fascinating thing, because the way you engage with the faction depends, the way your characters engage with the faction depend on that faction's goals.
Yes.
Taking that example, if wolves are gathering around you at night in the forest, what do you want? You want fire
yeah.
so you can poke at it, right?
Yeah.
A bear will slap it out of your hand and eat your head.
Yeah.
Right? You poke at it with fire and it goes, okay. And then
yeah.
it kills you. The wolves, on the other hand, are going to back up
yeah.
because they fight in a style that is avoidant, right?
And this is like a really, again, we have circled back to bears, but like the the thing about this is like even with this scant amount of detail that we've thrown into literally bears versus wolves, you can already see the way these conflicts would shake
yes.
out and what their interest is, right. even though both animals want to eat.
Now
we
imagine.
We have a vision for Yeah.
Now imagine.
Yeah.
Your characters are in a city and you're building out the city. And you need two groups, two factions. Well, we've got the bears, the city guard.
Yeah.
Who kick down the door and flaunt their authority.
Yeah.
And then we've got the Thieves Guild, who sticks to the shadows, avoids the fight as much as possible, but will absolutely stick that knife in your kidney the first chance they get, right? We have the same kinds of conflict, the same approaches with completely different kinds of factions, completely different trappings, right?
Mm.
And so I think one of the important things when you're building factions is understanding the archetypes, understanding the tropes that can set you up for success.
Yeah.
You know, using these shorthands and using these ways of relating these kinds of conflict in order to build factions that are immediately recognizable, right? Or subverting the tropes for maximum interest.
Yeah.
Imagine if the police didn't kick down the door, didn't flaunt their authority, but were willing to stab you.
Yeah.
That's a very different kind of police. Imagine if the Thieves Guild sauntered on around the city, knocking on your door politely, showing you their card, and saying, you're being robbed. That's actually one of my favorite authors, Terry Pratchett.
I knew this was coming the minute you started saying that.
I just thought of it. You know, the way he built his Thieves Guild faction in Ankh-Morpork. So if you're not familiar with Terry Pratchett, he wrote a series of books starting with Guards Guards. And if you pick that one up, the rest of them, you'll quickly get a sense of the world.
Oh yeah.
He was a fantastic world builder, even though nothing in his world makes sense.
Ridiculous.
It's okay. But one of the cool things he did is he completely subverted the trope of the Thieves Guild. They are an honorable bunch, card-carrying thieves who walk up to people and say, hey, have you been robbed? And the person says, yes, I've been robbed. I've reached my quota. Okay, I'm not going to rob you. Or have you been robbed? And they say, here's the card that I got that gives me immunity from being robbed this month because I paid my dues. No problem.
Yeah.
And then they police all of the thieves in the city.
Yeah.
What a fascinating faction. Right.
Well, and it also makes a lot of sense because the thieves would be able to do things the guards wouldn't be able to
do. That's right. So they break all sorts of legs
of
people who are unlicensed thieves.
Yeah. Actually, that's amazing. Basically, you form them into that. That is actually how a guild works, is you keep other people out of the guild. So it's like you could definitely see. And it's this is really just the power of a good faction and the way that you can subvert tropes. I think with this, we're trying to give you a tool here that can help you get your head around just how to very quickly create conflict in your world.
Yeah.
Not just conflict in your story, but conflict in your world. Now, this conflict between the Thieves Guild and the guards might not even be central. It can just be present.
Right.
It's just grist for the mill. It's just in the backdrop, and
that's
people don't ever have to engage with it, but they will know, they will be able to check their scorecard whenever they see members of those different factions interacting and understand what their relative objectives are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, because we live in a world that is full of groups of people at competing purposes, we naturally, as humans, understand that us versus them.
Yeah.
We naturally understand that my group, a different group.
Yeah.
Right? And so factions are just such a fantastic way to bring a sense of real conflict into a setting, to create, again, space for people to imagine what might be there, what might be hiding behind the veneer, right? And when somebody walks into a scene, when a visitant enters a scene, whether it's in a ballroom or whether it's in a barracks or whether it's in a tavern, they're going to expect naturally that there are groups. It would be weird if everyone was completely on board and aligned. It would be weird if everyone was a carbon copy of the next person.
Yeah.
And so factions allow you to to create contours. That tension. Yes, yeah. Contours, right? To give definition to the world. So great example. Let's say you walk into, or your visitant is observing a meeting between a character and a pair of merchants.
Yeah.
Well, make them different factions. Give them different purposes. And all of a sudden, the conflict is not just two merchants versus one character. It's your main character versus a merchant who are also at odds with each other, depending on how somebody phrases something. Yeah. Right? All of a sudden, you have just incredible dimension in what you're creating.
You've got one who's a money lender and is interested in making sure that everybody's on credit. And then you've got another who's a shipper or a delivery spec who wants to make sure that deliveries are not interrupted. He's been paid. So it's between those, you can already begin to see how there would be conflict between them and how there could be tension. And it's then, it creates this really, really nice shorthand and creates this world that is contoured and deep on a societal level, as well as on a lore and history.
Yeah, because that's the fascinating thing, is that you don't have to spend any time explaining what each of these people think. You can just say, well, that guy's in the conservative faction and that guy's a moneylender.
Yeah.
Right? And those two terms give enough context that people can imagine the rest. Or, you know, this guy works for a bank and that guy's a con man, right? Or that guy's part of a guild that's disreputable.
Yeah.
All of a sudden you start to see those contours, right? That detail that make the world rich.
So, as usual, we've gone directly into metaphors and made it like really big picture. And like, so let's nail
that
it
down.
That
is how we do it.
That is how we roll. But again, I want to nail us down to like some specifics. I think we've talked about why factions are good.
Yes.
And I think one is that it's a shorthand. It makes it easy for you to build characters on the fly and figure out their alignment. So having just an index card with some idea of a couple of factions in your head, not a bad place to go if you're a game master, if you're a writer as well, just having that sort of laid out. We've talked a little bit about how it adds contours and societal depth to a story, right? So you can see in the present what the world is doing outside it. And it means that your characters, it provides I'm just going to throw terms and coin them. An expansive limitation, right? Like it creates a limitation that's a good anchor point to give you lots to work with that character. So I guess a good question then is how do you make a good faction? Like what's a good starting place?
I think a good starting place is understanding why you want the faction in the first place.
Yeah. What's their effect in the story?
Yes. What's the purpose of having them in the story? And sometimes the purpose is this is a new faction that exists in the story because I need conflict for my main character and I don't want to reuse the same factions over again. Sometimes that's it, right? But understanding the purpose for it. But if you're just world building and you haven't gotten to story yet, then it's what is something important in this world that people will rally around?
Yeah.
Right. Understanding that context, I think, is really important. From there, I think picking that unified goal.
Yeah.
Right. The unified objective, that the direction in our vector.
Yeah.
To understand what are people trying to do?
Yeah.
Like, what's the point? Why did they get together?
Yeah.
It might be survival. It might be money. It might be status. It might be any number of things, right? Mm. But why are they getting together? So once you have that, what is the purpose of this faction? And then why are they actually together? That's when you can flesh out, I think, as much as you want.
Yeah.
Starting with the most important people.
Yeah.
Who are the people we're actually going to encounter?
Yeah.
Right? We don't need to build a complex story for Jim Bob, if he's a, you know, 13th cousin twice removed and isn't going to be part of the core conflict between the Hatfields and the McCoys.
Yeah.
Right? We don't care about him, but we do care about the patriarchs and matriarchs of those two clans.
Yeah.
Right? We do care about the people that you're going to encounter. So start there. Start with, who am I actually going to observe? Who's my visitant, I should say, going to actually observe?
Yeah.
And then I like to do allies and enemies.
Yeah.
Who are the people who are allies to the death? Who are the people who are allies of convenience? Who are the people who are allies because they're planning on stabbing you in the back?
Yeah. So like the Arcanists and the Merchants Guilds might get along for the time being because they're smuggling arcane artifacts, you know, or something to that effect. Yeah.
But you also want to identify who are your fast enemies.
Yeah.
And so the Mechanists might be about to invent a new calculator that's going to completely undercut the Arcanists' calculation devices and get the merchants on their side.
Arithmancy.
Right?
Yeah.
And so you might have factions that are allies for now.
Yeah.
And are enemies later. But understanding in the current context who your allies and enemies are,
I
think that's important.
What I like here, though, is that like I like this idea going back to factions being vectors, right? Like they have a direction they're going. So like, I know very little about programming, but I'm just going to throw this out there, right? Like, if you put an equation in, right? So for anybody out there who likes math, if you put an equation in x squared, there's a ton of data in how x squared operates versus putting just loads of digits in. The point is, the equation gives you an idea where you're going and allows you to project in the future what is going to happen. You don't have to come up with all of the data. You just have to know where they are going to.
Correct.
And what I mean by all of this is, like, the Merchant Guild have an interest in the stability of their sales.
Yes.
If that happens to align with the anarchists, we're golden.
Yes.
If it then aligns with the mechanists, we have a problem.
Right.
And that does a lot of the legwork for you. Like, you don't have to come up with a lot of the whys and wherefores. You just have to look at the objective of each faction and why they might be at odds.
Right.
Now, there could be star-crossed lovers between any number of these factions. The individuals in them could be any number of shades in between. They could have a cousin who's an Arcanist and they're pushing, you know, all these kinds
of
things.
Or maybe they were.
But, yeah.
Right.
Or maybe they're both part of both factions and they're trying to make them, like, trying to make it work. There's a number of different ways this could happen. Don't let it limit you, but let it inform your world building.
Right.
And it creates those interesting political contours. Because even in just throwing Arcanist, Mechanist, Merchants in here, we already have an interesting tri-directional factional conflict that could go anywhere and immediately adds depth. And I bet any of you that are into fantasy novels or GMing right now are thinking like, yeah, I see how that could work. And I could put this here and this there and this character would work here. And you already start piecing it together on very scant information, but we have created a tense environment already.
Yeah.
It's very, very easy to do using factions.
So that's the reason I think we want allies and enemies, is because we want conflict, right? Mm-hmm. In a lot of ways, world building is just a million tiny conflicts.
Yeah, unresolved conflicts.
Right. And it's in that we find the richest worlds. These situations that they don't have to be fraught, but they have to have unresolved conflicts in order to be interesting. But factions are just such a great way to do that, such great shorthand for it. If you'll indulge a story about how I've done this.
Yeah, yeah. Please, go for it.
I was writing a book and I had a character who my main character encountered. And this person was a merchant and didn't get along with the main character. And I didn't enjoy the way this merchant had turned out.
Yeah.
But early in their encounters, I had mentioned that they were part of something called the Golden Scale Alliance. Okay? So this is what I have. A merchant who I don't like as a character.
Yeah.
And the Golden Scale Alliance. and then my main character. Do you know how easy it was for me to substitute that character by just allowing my main character to go up a pay grade? Right? Yeah. All of a sudden, it's, I'm not dealing with you, I'm dealing with your boss.
Yeah.
And I was able to introduce a much more interesting character who I liked a lot more, who was part of the same faction, still had the same goals, was still aligned in the same direction, which was at odds with my main character.
Yeah.
And now I have a richer way for them to interact.
Yeah.
And so by creating the faction, if I had just said, no, the bad guy, the conflict is with this individual, then I would have been stuck with this character. And yeah, I would have had to go back and rewrite literally like 15 chapters of content in order to make it a better interaction. Instead, I was able to introduce a new character who is pretty much like, yeah, nobody likes him.
Yeah.
So the feeling that you have right now as a reader,
yeah,
that's totally normal.
Yeah.
But I'm still not interested in this deal. I'm still at odds with you. I still want something at cross purposes. And so we're going to now fight, right?
Yeah.
With a new character who's much better.
Well, that's interesting because I think factions allow you to have conflict between likable characters.
Like, yes,
that's
yes,
like actually an interesting
thing. That's exactly
thing. It. And that's like a lot.
That's
of the,
what I was trying to say.
A lot of the issue is like people don't just get into fights with people because they're jerks. They get into fights with them because they are at cross purposes. And factions allow for that sort of shorthand thing. And again, it's about goals and objectives.
Right.
So I think I'll go ahead and close us out here for the podcast. I hope you enjoyed this. If it was useful to you, please don't forget to subscribe and review us. A rating would be a really great way to get the word out and make sure that other folks can find us. Lastly, but not leastly, I'd like to talk to you. We have a very active Discord server for world builders of all kinds to enjoy. Loads of writers, TTRPG enthusiasts, visual artists, theater folks, we've got it all, and they're all passionate as you are about world building and telling stories. Links are in the show notes for all these good things. As always, for Seth, I'm James, and this has been another episode of the Worldcraft Club podcast. Thanks for listening.